Good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy. Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm sitting in for Dr. K. She is away at a conference. I have the honor of being here at Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. It's homecoming at Morgan State University. And at the Morgan State University School of Global Journalism, they and communications, they are dedicating the important Garden of Fame. We have three incredible Morgan alum celebrities with us today. We're starting out with Dr. Rochelle Stevens. She is a superstar, a 1996 Olympic gold medalist for the United States women's 4x40 meter relay team. She's also was part of the silver medal team in the same event. And she went to the Summer Olympics in Barcelona. She is with me in Baltimore right now, looking incredible. I can't imagine that it was 1992 that you made America proud. Welcome back to Morgan State University.
Thank you so much. It's always good to come back home, and to all the Morganites that's out there, hey, show up for homecoming. I'm just here to see everybody.
Everybody. Now, this is the Garden of Fame. They are dedicating three Morgan alumni who have done extraordinary things. You've not only represented Morgan well, you've represented our country well. What's it like to come back to Morgan and be honored, one of the first trustees to be inducted in the Garden of Fame?
I am very elated to be honored. This would be number seven, but
wow.
This is my first Hall of Fame induction that is not related to track and field.
Oh, nice.
So this is a great honor, and I'm just so elated, overwhelmed with joy. And, you know, I have been able to utilize my communication skills ever since I graduated from here. I negotiated over 35 Fortune 500 contracts for myself. I have written and produced my own autobiography, Travel the World by Foot. I have a cardio DVD. So my communication skill set, it all started right here at Morgan, because I came from Tennessee and I was barely writing a paragraph. So now, you know, to be able to author a book and to be able to represent this communications department and let people know, hey, HBCU is on the move and their graduates are too.
What would you say to Morgan students, students around the country who are watching you, wondering if this is what they should be involved in? Can they make a living? Can they achieve their dreams in communications, bringing all that package together? What would you say to encourage them?
I would basically say that you have two types of people. And you have a group that's, they're listening, mm-hmm. and they'll get up and they will do. And then you have a group that's listening and they won't get up and do anything. So it's, how bad do you want your dream? Are you willing to work hard for it? You know, I always say to children and athletes everywhere, my favorite slogan is, some people dream of success while others wake up and work hard at it. So it's, how bad do you really want your dream to come true? Your dreams don't come alive unless you get up and put some work into it. So any dream that you have, it can come true. We don't know what you're dreaming about until you get up and make it happen.
And make it happen. Now, who was the Dr. Rochelle Stevens? Who was the person that inspired you? Who did you look up and say, you know what? I want to be like that person, or I want to walk in their footsteps.
At the age of 12, I watched the Wilma Rudolph story. And I said, hey, I want to go to the Olympics too.
That's right.
I didn't realize that it, you know, required so much work. But that was my dream at the age of 12, and I started that mission. I was recruited by 25 universities and colleges. I chose Morgan State University because the coach put emphasis on that I would graduate from college. And I knew that I would probably fall between the cracks if I went to my first choice school, University of Tennessee, Florida, LSU, Nebraska, or any of those schools. But I chose Morgan State University, and I was able to obtain my bachelor's degree in 3.5 years. I was able to reach my dreams. And as I tell my friends that played in the NFL and NBA, and some of my colleagues that are here now, Hines, he's a champion and NFL player from Morgan State. If I had gone to my first choice school or any SEC school, I don't care how well accomplished I am, football was their number one sport.
Oh,
basketball
yeah.
is their number one sport. And I will probably never get the recognition that I'm getting here at Morgan State. And I'm just so pleased that I chose Morgan State University. And when they say Morgan forever, that's me. I'm Morgan forever.
Well, we're blessed that you chose Morgan, and we're happy you chose Morgan. Do you remember, let me take you back to when you won that gold medal, when you won that silver medal, and they placed that medal around your neck. This beautiful young girl from Memphis, Tennessee, achieving her dream. What goes through your mind when you think about that?
It was really a dream come true. It took a lot of hard work, dedication, a lot of tears, you know, to be able to train at all types of elements. To be the best in the world, you have to make a lot of adjustments.
Sacrifices.
I had the opportunity to travel the world for 12 years, top in the world, the whole time I competed in track and field. And all I can think was, hey, I'm representing Morgan State, because they'll say, how many HBCU students are making the Olympic team?
Wow.
How many HBCU are they graduates? And knowing that at that time we had a track that was still out of gravel. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the facilities. We definitely didn't have the weight room. And we was not flying to track meets. And to be able to overcome those little bitty challenges, because it wasn't a real challenge, because when you want to be the best in the world, you don't care what the equipment, the status of the school is, but it's that dream, that inner hope that you have in yourself. Mm-hmm. And to be able to have that gold medal go around my neck in August of 1996, yes, I dropped tears, because it took 18 years to get there. And I was a drug-free athlete, and I'm proud to say that I never did drugs. You know, I've refused to disgrace myself, my university, and my family with the smear of, hey, she was a drug athlete. I'm proud to say I was drug-free, and I'm just so elated to be a part of the Morgan State family.
Well, I'm getting the word that they need you outside. Dr. Rochelle Stevens, making Morgan very proud, Olympian superstar, and a Morganite forever. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate you being
here.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Happy homecoming.
Happy homecoming, Morgan. Folks, we're going to be talking to April Ryan here in just a little while. We also have, I'm looking here at my notes, William Roden is also going to join me. It is homecoming weekend here at the School of Global Journalism and Communications. They are dedicating the Garden of Fame, and we are so honored to have Dr. Rochelle Stevens, April Ryan, William Roden, and others, along with our great Dean Wickham, here at the great School of Communications and Global Journalism. We are getting ready to go outside. We're going to have part of the program. And, I'm getting signals. I have a clip I want you to listen to. Let's go to Dr. Rochelle Stevens talking about a lunch and learn clip that she did. She does these all over the country, talking about healthy living, wellness. Dr. Rochelle Stevens.
I'm the owner of Rochelle's Health and Wellness, and this is my 18th year. So I've been doing lunch and learns, or should I just say corporate motivational speaking, corporate wellness, for the last 15 years. We are conducting a lunch learn seminar for the employees for Shelby County Schools to teach the employees about better nutrition, health, wellness, the proper techniques and things that you need to know before you decide to exercise, walk, or run.
Memphis is known for obesity. Our students, even in Shelby County Schools, are obese. And that's one of the missions of Coordinate School Health, is to decrease the obesity in Shelby County Schools.
I'm just hoping to inspire, motivate, and encourage our leaders to become more healthy, because we need you to be healthy in order to execute the jobs that needs to be done in our city.
I'm Anthony McCarthy in Today for Dr. K here at the Today for with Dr. K show on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I am so excited. I'm here with a student here at the School of Global Journalism and Communications, Penelope Blackwell. Welcome to the program, Penelope.
Thank you so much for having
me. What year
me.
Are you here at Morgan?
I am currently a senior multimedia journalism.
You look
major.
So young. You're a senior.
Yes, I am.
So what is multimedia journalism? What are you studying?
Well, I study how communication is delivered and disseminated across the global aspect. And I currently am studying and focusing on creating video and writing news stories and things like that.
So what do you want to do with that degree that you're going to get later this year?
Well, I definitely have an interest in business and financial reporting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'll end up on the print and digital side, where I can produce content for stories like that, or possibly grad school at Arizona State University or the University of Maryland in College Park.
So you want to continue your education?
Oh, definitely.
So you don't see a lot of people of color, a lot of black women working in that field. Mm-hmm. You'll be breaking some glass ceilings. You'll be breaking some barriers down. Why do you want to go into this field of work?
Well, I believe that this field of work chose me. I don't like it's something that I want to. It's something that I have to do. I feel like it's a part of me. Even growing up, I was always taught to have a voice and always ask questions. And I think that has kind of played into my development as a journalist.
Now, where did you come from?
I am from D.C.
Oh, you're from D.C.
Yes.
So you came across the way to Morgan at Baltimore. Why did you? Who was your hero when you were a young girl and you were thinking of what business you wanted to go into, what field you wanted to go into? Any role models, any folks that you wanted to emulate?
Of course, Oprah has always been at the forefront.
I want to be like Oprah myself. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think that I wouldn't say that I like looked up to anyone. Mm-hmm. I definitely have had people that I whose work that I read and people that I follow now that I mm-hmm. understand what it means to like have a voice and what it means to actually be a journalist. So
there's a lot of sacrifice. You heard Dr. Rochelle Stevens say you got to really put in the work. You got to be willing to be sacrifice when everybody else is out doing playing and partying. You've got to focus on the work. You got to focus on the profession. Have you found it to be a position or a field that you really have to focus on and sacrifice?
Oh, definitely. Well, with having leadership positions within the School of Global Journalism and Communications, I think that sacrifice plays a huge role in just my everyday tasks. Nice. So work-life balance doesn't really apply when you're a journalist. You have to be like a journalist and have work-life balance. So you kind of just have so much that it entails, and it can be a lot at times, mm-hmm. but I enjoy every minute of it.
Tell us a little bit about that leadership, leadership roles that you play here at the School of Global Journalism.
During my tenure here at Morgan, I have served as MSU president, the MSU president of NABJ, MSU ABJ, and currently I serve as the editor-in-chief of the MSU spokesman.
Really? You're the editor of the spokesman?
Yes.
One of the great newspapers here on the campus of Morgan State University. So what do you see yourself doing in the next couple of years? If I came to see you in 2 years, 3 years, what would you be doing?
I would be producing content for a platform. Hopefully along a business and financial track, mm-hmm. or just maybe at the Baltimore Sun or
that's
the Washington
right.
uh-huh. Post or something mm-hmm. like that. So
do you think you'll go to grad school immediately, or will you?
I don't know yet. That's what I'm figuring out at the moment. I don't know if I want to get a little experience first and then kind of go into grad school with a particular focus in mind or concentration in mind, or if I just want to just continue my education.
Mm-hmm. So if there's a young person listening or there's a student listening, what kind of advice would you give them about pursuing their dreams, about going for the things they want in life?
I would offer them the little nugget of just
sometimes the little nuggets are the best ones to give people.
Stick with it and eat it, breathe it, sleep it. Just be hungry for it.
Penelope Blackwell is a senior here at the School of Global Journalism and Communications. She has been involved in all kinds of wonderful publications and leadership here at our great school. I appreciate your time. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, we're going to, in the next hour, we're going to be talking about what's going on here in the public school system at Baltimore City. There's some conversations around whether or not school police should be armed in the public schools. A lot of parents, a lot of folks have an opinion about that. We will be talking about that later in the next couple of hours. We'll be taking your calls here on Today with Dr. K. I want you to join us later. Of course, you'll be able to call in. We can't take your calls now, but we'll be talking about all of the issues. We're excited about the Garden of Fame that's taking place outside of the School of Global Journalism right now. April Ryan, Dr. Rochelle Stevens, and a lot of other folks here. T. Ortiz. Oh, I wanted to get it right. Thank you for joining me. Tell us, tell the listeners of Today with Dr. K a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about me. I am a senior studying strategic communications here at Morgan State.
You look too young to be a senior.
Oh, my God, I'm almost 30 years old. Thank you.
I want to do whatever you're doing.
Well, just, you know, I tell people, just, you know, be the Energizer Bunny. Don't let your... I am a older transfer studying strategic communications here at Morgan State. I also have the honor of being the WEAA on air, one of the WEAA on air hosts for the Morgan Mashup, which is our weekly variety show. Mm-hmm. In addition, I am actively, you know, all throughout this campus, specifically in the SGJC, as a leader in the strategy shop, an academic leader. I also hold membership in both the PRSSA and NABJ chapters.
Wonderful. You are busy.
Try to be.
You are busy, busy, busy. So tell me a little bit about why you came to Morgan and what your experiences are here like here at the School of Global Journalism and Communications.
Well, I came to Morgan I basically had the whole gamut of going to colleges. Morgan is, in fact, my fourth college in my 10 years of trying to obtain my bachelor's. And so
this woman's not a quitter.
No, I'm not a quitter. We've got to see it through, and I'm going to see it through here at Morgan. What I would say is that I've had my fair share of various experiences. I've done the community college. I also went to a PWI. Mm-hmm. There were very, I would say that in so many ways, in my experience, I was, you know, I hate to say it and use this term, but I don't have any other way to say it, the black sheep. I had a lot of schools that didn't know how to deal with me I'm from Oakland, California as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm not only,
Oakland,
you know, an older
girl.
Student, uh-huh. I've been through various colleges, but I'm also an out-of-state student. And so I love Morgan. You know, I went through a lot of different experiences, but Morgan has just encompassed everything that it stands for. It's made me a more resilient and more confident individual in my skills and abilities. And I just want to take everything that I've learned here and not only change my local communities, but change the world.
So I'm reading your bio, and you have been involved in advocating for civil and human rights. You've been involved in working against human trafficking. You have been involved in a lot of very important issues. Do you think Morgan and the communication school here has prepared you to be in that fight, to be in that kind of advocacy work?
Most definitely. I aspire to continue to amplify the diverse experiences of the human essence in its entirety. And I think that Morgan, you know, I actually met with the dean and board of directors today, and the dean encouraged us to really bring a diverse perspective to all the work that we do. So not just be hired by one company or individual with a certain perspective and try to appease those perspectives, mm-hmm. but have true challenge in the thoughts and ideas that we put forward, and be okay with challenging perspectives and ideas that are not out there or that currently exist.
I love your energy. Now, there are probably people who are listening right now who want to go back to school, who thought about going back to school, and they see challenges. What would you say to encourage them to go for their dream, to go for it? What would you say to tell them to go for it and not be afraid?
I think, first of all, just as being a human being in today's society, every day waking up is a challenge.
Amen,
right?
Amen.
It's about, you know, what challenges am I going to get a return on my investment? Mm-hmm. And so for me, as an older student, going back to school was not just about getting the letters behind my name, but building the confidence of self in not only being a young woman, a young, you know, woman of color, a young activist, but really give me all the versatility, all the skills needed. And somewhat, I would say, in so many ways, it kind of like a nudge in the gut, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say about Morgan is this is a place that's iron sharpens iron.
Amen.
You want to learn more because you've got people who are very driven to be better, to do better. And so I think if you're an older person and you want to go back to school, just know that your investment is in yourself. Your obligation is to first and foremost yourself and then to the community around you. And that in the entirety of it, although it may be challenging, it will be well worth it as you see what you're able to do and how you take that education and liberate others.
You have such confidence and you have such a strong voice. Where did you learn to find that voice inside you?
I think
who taught you that?
For political purposes, I mean, I'm a person of faith, and so
amen,
I believe,
amen.
You know, mm-hmm. In God, and I think that God is the first and foremost reason why I'm here. I think secondly, I was able to engage in activities that really made me see my self-worth and give me opportunities for self-sustainability and understanding, and so things that really expanded my knowledge about who I was prior. I wanted to get challenges. And so I think it was just about really saying, you know, I heard a quote from a friend when I was younger, and they said, when life gives you lemons, you don't make lemonade. When life gives you lemons, you make chocolate cake and leave people wondering how you made it. And so I think that's
I love
what it's
it.
About.
That's what it's about.
I think
about.
It's about making something out of nothing and, mm-hmm. and really understand that even if you feel like you have nothing, in fact, we all come with something, and it's just trying to find that you know, that niche. And so I think in so many ways, I'm still finding mine, and I'm excited to get this degree and see what's next.
T. Ortiz, if I came to see you in 5 years, what would I find? Who would I find?
Ooh, you would see a woman who's got her hands in various pots. I don't want to be tied down or held down to one medium or one platform. I want to be able to really put my hands in the cookie jar, in the whole gamut. And I also see myself getting a master's degree in psychology.
Oh, wonderful.
Because what I want to focus on is neurolinguistics.
Uh-huh.
As we understand, the language that we use really changes or affects the way that people see you in society. And so understanding the terminology that we use in everyday life can really shape situations, laws, and even societal circumstances.
How are you marrying psychology and communications? How are you bringing all that together?
Again, I think it's about just psychology really encompasses in the way that humans think and the way in which we react. And I think that we have to understand that language evokes reactions and it evokes action. Mm-hmm. And so how do we marry those two? And I think in its entirety, the combination of the both will essentially really put forth that best the best of the both worlds in emphasizing my strategic communications.
I can only imagine, world, look out. You are going to do some amazing. You're already doing great things. You're going to be doing some amazing things. Thanks for spending time with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you.
Have a blessed day.
I'm Anthony McCarthy. I'm sitting in this week for Dr. K. She's at a conference. This is Today with Dr. K here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Good evening. Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Anthony McCarthy. I've had the honor of sitting in as Dr. K's been away at a conference. We've been talking about some exciting issues. It's homecoming week here at Morgan State University. The School of Global Journalism and Communications is abuzz. There are people everywhere. They're kicking off the Great Garden of Fame out in front of the school. Everyone is out there. We just got done talking to some wonderful inductees into the Garden of Fame. But we know that the issues that are facing our city, the issues that are facing our families are important to you. So we're going to spend the next hour and a half talking about a very important issue in our public schools. Joining me again this week, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright. He's president of the School Police Union. And he's first vice president of the Maryland Fraternal Order of Police. Clyde, great to have you on board with me.
Thank you for having me.
You know, a lot of people were talking. You and I were on together earlier this week, and you mentioned that a big issue coming up is having an interface, a conversation with parents, teachers, citizens of the great city of Baltimore about arming our school police. Should our school police be armed while they're on duty in our schools? And right now, our officers don't have their firearms.
Correct.
They lock their guns away when they come on school grounds.
Yes.
And if something were to happen, they've got to get back to that firearm. And a lot of people think that that's taking a chance.
Absolutely.
But I will tell you, I got texts and calls from a lot of parents who didn't like the idea of school police having their guns.
Understood.
They like the idea of their kids seeing officers in uniforms,
but they like the idea of them not having their weapon on them. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, in American policing, the firearm is just a tool
that's on the belt.
It's just like Batman, you know, if you want to use a fictional character.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a tool. I mean, it's the equivalent of telling a firefighter that you must put out a fire.
However,
without a hose,
without, a hose.
Mm-hmm. without you know, without an axe to break into the location to get to the fire. So I think that, you know, police officers, yes, we do have an image problem nationwide and definitely in Baltimore. But we need to get back to the image of our police officers being protectors. And that's because that's the ultimately the core focus of what we are supposed to be doing as police officers. We are public servants and we're supposed to deliver quality civic service. And that's our goal.
Now, folks who know me, they know I come from a police family. Two uncles who are police officers. I have an uncle that is a state trooper in Virginia. When I was a kid, I considered these guys my superheroes.
Yes.
If there was danger, they didn't run from the danger. They ran to the danger.
Yes.
A lot of young people in public schools today, as you said, see officers in a very different light.
Yes.
And that's not because of the great things a lot of officers are doing. It's because of the one or two officers that may have done something that has kind of tarnished the whole badge.
Yes.
How do we begin to rehab, change that image that young people, before we get into this about weapons and our police officers, how do we change that image for young people?
It's about, first of all, we've taken the steps to have these internal courageous conversations mm-hmm. with ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, we look in the mirror and said, we need to fix some of the things that we have done as law enforcement, and we need to get the community support. We have to earn that trust back. And we've gone through steps. I mean, if you look over the last few years, you've seen many dancing videos of cops dancing and you know, interacting. Because ultimately, in the past, there was no way we didn't capture the good things that we did. We just chalked it up as part of the job.
It's part of what we do.
You know, whenever you pulled someone out of a burning building, or you pulled somebody out of a car that was, you know, just in an accident, or you caught a shooting suspect, it was just part of the job. So now, with the advent of social media and things like that, bad news travels worse and faster than good news. What's the old saying? Bad news travels before the good news has the chance to put their pants on.
That's right.
So, you know, we now have to start telling our story. And that's what we're doing, is telling mm-hmm. our story for the good, because it's, you know, unfortunately, it's always, you know, been overshadowed by some of the bad things that have happened in American policing.
I want to invite our listeners into our conversation. Sergeant Clyde Boatwright is with me, president of the Baltimore City Public School Police Union. He's also first vice president of the Maryland Fraternal Order of Police, one of the most respected officers in the state of Maryland. And he joins me as we talk about a very important issue right now in the public school system. Right now, Baltimore City school police are not armed with guns while they're in school properties. There is a movement afoot, and a lot of people believe that these officers should be allowed to carry their weapons in the public schools. I want to know what you think. Do you think these officers should have their weapons? What do you think about the argument that it's not a good image for children to see police officers with guns? 410-319-8888, that's the number. 410-319-8888, that's the number if you want to join the conversation with Sergeant Boatwright and I. I like what you said about the gun really is just a resource.
Correct.
It's a tool.
Correct.
But a lot of people place an enormous amount of power in that image.
Sure.
Tell me what you think we have in this society. Why have we placed so much in that imagery of a gun?
Well,
does that gun have so much power?
Because so many times we never know when we will have to use that tool. I've been a police officer for 18 years.
Had to fire your weapon?
I have never fired my weapon
really?
In the course of my duties as a police officer. I have had to, I've been close to that scenario.
Sure.
But you know, those scenarios that come about, they're so instantaneous, and you have to make quick critical decisions. And, you know, the decision to not fire, I mean, there's been three times that I've been shot at while as a police officer, have taken gunfire. So, you know, without having a clear backdrop and without having all of the different things that we have to go through for our training, you know, I could not return fire, or I couldn't shoot that individual that shot at me. So, you know, so these things are a reality. I think it's a tool. I think it's, you know, something that we need to accomplish our job. But, you know, for those that say school police have been doing well without their weapons, I mean, it's a roll of the dice every time. I keep using that term. It's a dice roll. You never know what you're going to get. You know, there's been, you know, I know we're going to talk about it a little bit more, but we've had less than 30 days of school. You remember we were for a few days due to air conditioning. Well, we've had less than 30 days in school, and in Baltimore City, we've recovered 3 handguns.
Wow. I didn't realize you've recovered 3 handguns.
3 handguns in less than 30 days of school.
Were these in high school, elementary school, middle school?
Two was at an elementary middle with a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old. And yesterday we recovered one from a high school around the corner at Achievement Academy.
And so, folks, I have to say this, and I tend to – I don't give my opinion oftentimes because I like for the listeners to share and they don't feel like they're being biased or that the host is controlling the conversation. But I have to tell you, 3 handguns in a few weeks, and we've got to take a chance that these officers are going to be able to get to their gun.
Correct.
And they're going to be able to protect the children, the men and women, the teachers, the administrators, and the folks in that building at a critical time. I'm really curious about what you think. Do you think that these officers should be armed? And I want you also to explain to me, because I know a lot of you have told me you don't like that image. You don't want your son or your daughter to see that officer walking around in the school with the gun. Explain that to us as well. 410-319-8888. Greg's calling from right here in Baltimore, a new caller. Greg, I appreciate you calling. Tell me what you think.
Welcome.
Well, hello, gentlemen. I wanted to let you know, I'm actually an NRA-certified instructor.
All right.
And from my perspective, it blows me, especially when you just told me that that you recovered 3 handguns
in less than 3 weeks.
It absolutely blows me away that these police are not allowed to carry their firearm in school. It's part of their job. Mm-hmm. And now, maybe 20, 30 years ago, I would agree and say, well, the policeman is there. You know, kids aren't really a threat. But with the police shootings, with the school shootings that we've had and with everything going on in this day and age, you're handicapping a police officer and you're asking for trouble. I just don't get it.
Do you think that it's a different, and maybe Greg, you can explain this to me or help me understand. People see our school police in a somewhat of a different light because I think oftentimes they don't think that officers like Sergeant Boatwright, when they're on duty, are actually policing. They think, oh, they're watching kids in a school, but they're actually on duty. They're actually working and serving while they're on duty in our public schools. Do you think that there is a valid argument that they've been pretty successful without their guns up to this point?
I think that is a valid argument if you don't take into consideration all the issues that we've had with school shootings.
Yeah, very true.
But, it's as you said earlier, it is part of your handicapping a person. It's part of their equipment. It identifies them, if nothing else. This person's not a security guard or an overblown, counselor or security guard, that they are actual, police officer trained to use this firearm, and it would make me feel safer if I was a kid.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Absolutely.
I think so, too. Greg, I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you taking the time to give us a call. Greg, thank you. Oh, Greg's gone. So, Sergeant, I'm trying to say this in as tactful as a way as possible. We're talking life and death now.
Absolutely.
Oftentimes, when you're on duty, we know that there have been school shootings all over the country. But do you understand when you hear a mom or a dad say, I don't know if it's a good thing to have this officer armed in the public school system.
Well, I understand where mm-hmm. a parent could have hesitation.
Yeah.
But it's all about educating. Our children are, they are resilient.
Yeah,
if
they
you
are.
Give them the proper education, if you let them know that the police officer is not
the smarter than
end.
We're giving them credit for.
Right. You know, too many times, if I'm in uniform and I walk into a local establishment and I have a parent say, if you continue to be bad, I'm going to tell him on you. That's giving the kid the false sense that I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
And trying to talk to members of the public and try to educate them and say, hey, you know, we're not the bad guy. We don't want, if something was to happen to you, and this child is the only person who could have helped us solve the crime,
mm-hmm.
he would, say, I'm not, the child would say, I'm not going to talk to you because my mom told me that you were bad. So, yeah. It's all about imagery, and it's all about correcting that imagery. You know, we want people to see us in a different light. I mean, if you look at Baltimore, I talked about this the other day when we were on the show when I called in. In Baltimore, we have a new technology called ShotSpotter.
That's right.
And that was brought in, by the mayor's office. There's a citywide alert that goes on, and not only is there a citywide alert, there's also a cell phone app that goes along with it for police officers in the district. Once the ShotSpotter is activated,
mm-hmm.
It tells you exactly the location where the gunshots were fired. Well, 8 times this school year, again, we're under 30 days, 8 times we've had a shooting, a confirmed shooting, within 2 to 3 blocks of a Baltimore City school. 8 times. This is during the day.
8 times.
This is between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m.
And that shooter could very easily then run to a school.
Towards the school and try to, if you look at the shooting that we had at the funeral in Lansdowne,
yeah.
That shooter, allegedly ran towards Lansdowne High School,
that's
which was
right.
also placed in that's Baltimore
and
County.
They had to lock the school
but
down.
They had to lock the school down. That's the same thing we go through. It's something called reverse alert status. When we have a confirmed shooting, we shut down a school, our officers are in place. But if it's an officer that is assigned to that school and the discharge happens outside of his building, wherever he is in the building, he has to then leave from that location, fly to wherever the gun is stored, arm himself, and then go into the lockdown mode. I mean, that's time. Mm-hmm. That takes time.
And in that time, anything could happen.
Anything could happen.
410-319-8888. That's the number. What do you think? Should our school police officers be armed? Baltimore City is going through a review process right now. They want to hear from you about whether or not you think school police officers should have their service weapon on them at all times while they're on duty. John's calling from Northwest Baltimore. John, I appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling. Welcome to the program.
Welcome, John.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, John.
I absolutely believe that the school police officers should have weapons. And what astounds me is that the government wants to arm school teachers, but they don't want to arm the people who actually had the training to carry the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense to me.
Now, would you understand when, if say your wife or one of the mothers of the children say, well, I don't like that image. I don't want my son or my daughter seeing this police officer with his gun on him.
I don't think she'd appreciate the image of her child being shot. When there's a police officer who could have done something about it.
Very true.
Standing right next to him.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer is there to protect the kids. You should give him the weapons that he needs to do that, the equipment that he needs to do that.
Yeah, John. John, I think you're on point. 410.
So we appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you participating in our conversation. 410-319-8888. When you are engaging the community on this, mm-hmm. we kind of hinted about this at the beginning of the show. You guys have got to carry the burden for a lot of misbehavior by some officers.
Sure.
And we paint a very broad brush when it comes to police officers. We did a show about the officer in the Baltimore City Police Department who was drunk on duty.
Sure.
And a lot of people were calling in, and they were saying, well, that's nothing new. That's what the police do. They really were painting all of you with the exact same brush. I think that the hurdle, as you said, bad news travels very fast, but the hurdle, we have so much work to do to change the image, not only that adults have of police officers, but what children have of police officers.
So I will say this. I've been you know, tackling this issue for maybe the last 4 years now. And with dealing with this issue, the overwhelming majority of parents that I engage or encounter say that they want their school police officers armed.
Really?
There's a very, very, very small, minute group.
But vocal.
But vocal. They're very vocal. And they've gone to get, you know, online petitions and things like that. People who are not even Baltimore City residents are on these petitions, but, you know, don't have a stake in the school system. They have don't have kids there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for that small group of parents, let's say it's 10. Let's say it's 10 parents and they all have two children apiece. All right. Those children still do not outweigh the other 83,000 students of the city school system and their safety. You know, so to be vocal, and I encourage every parent to be vocal and involved in your child's school. I certainly am in my child's school. So I get that. So I'm not discouraging that. But let's talk about facts. They use this school police officers with guns issue to create a platform. The platform stated that we were arresting too many students.
Mm-hmm.
So the platform said that our policies and procedures were not up to date because they found a few policies that changed, like the marijuana standard and things like that, and highlighted these different things. Oh, Baltimore City School Police, they are part of the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights. Policies haven't been changed since 2013. Too many arrests.
Wow.
So you know what the school system did? They looked at all of that. They changed policy. Policy was changed. Look at our arrest numbers. You know, we went from arresting 250 to 500 students a year to, you know, maybe 39 per for a whole school year.
Mm-hmm.
So our arrest, the quality of arrest is now what is the focus. You know, we don't get involved in some of the things that we used to get involved in, telling little Johnny to take his hat off in the hallway.
That's right.
You know, disciplinary stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when I first came on, that was commonplace. You know, the principals would sick us on hey, you know, Officer Boatwright, little Johnny won't take his hat off. And so, you know, we would get involved in that. We don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the platform that was used by this small group, the numbers don't lie now. The arrest numbers are down. The policies are changed. But you still don't want the police officers to be armed because of an image. I mean, that is the it's very, very disheartening because the safety of we don't need the guns for students.
That's right.
We need the guns for the outside element.
For because people somewhere, coming outside of the school system. And unfortunately, some of the students are bringing guns.
There is somebody somewhere planning the next school shooting. There's somebody somewhere planning the next school
shooting. That's the reality. Steven's calling from Woodlawn. Steven, I appreciate you calling. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. I was just wondering how the three guns that were recovered, like was there use of force involved in recovering these guns?
That's a good question.
Apparently, I'm reading the Sun article about this. There were about three guns recovered last year. And so I'm truly concerned, like, you know, as you all have said, that three guns were recovered within the first 3 weeks of school, four weeks of school.
Mm-hmm.
And can you give me a little bit more about the circumstances of an elementary school kid bringing the gun to school? And also, finally, my last question is about responding to, like, it not necessarily the... just the brutality related to last year's video of the police officer, school police officer who was beating that kid up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's all I want to know.
Thank you, Steven.
So that's the hurdle. You know, that's, you know, for some people that are in opposition to us, they always want to point back to the 2016 video from the Reach Partnership High School, which is at Lake Clifton.
Mm-hmm.
That officer was adjudicated.
He smacked the devil out of that child.
And the first comment, you know, because that case is over, the officer, mm-hmm. you know, has since, you know, resigned from his position,
he's doing well.
But the first thing he said to me is when I got there.
I know it's tough.
He said, he spit on me.
Yeah.
Look at my uniform. Mm. And I photographed his uniform as evidence. And the evidence showed that he was spat on. And so that was a natural reaction. I mean, the one thing about policing, and we have to, as the community, we have, you know, I guess it's my job as to educate the community that police officers are not robots.
They're human.
They're human. Mm-hmm. And that was a human reaction. And I don't think that, you know, with knowing this person for the last 20 years, that it was his intent to beat this kid up, mm-hmm. because he had full capability to do that. Yeah, he could have beat him up if he wanted to beat him up. And, you know, after it was all over, you know, that's a life lesson, mm-hmm. that, you know, you're not going to spit on another grown man. So
talk a little bit about the investigations in these weapons. How were these weapons retrieved? How did you all find out that the students had weapons?
In the elementary school case, one of the children involved, and, you know, I don't want to get too deep in because they're pending. But one of the children involved discharged the weapon in the bathroom. So there was a gun that was fired, and, you know, it was really, really loud, and, you know, everybody heard it. So the bullet struck something. Don't want to get into that, but the bullet struck something, and, mm-hmm. and it was legitimately fired. And you know, the staff.
That could have been a horrible situation.
Oh, it could have been.
It could have been a fatal situation.
You know, even for the child himself, mm-hmm. That child could have injured themselves by mistake. So, you know, once that first handgun was found, there was a decision to bring the relative in to have a conversation with them. And then that's when the second gun was found as well.
Three guns, 4 weeks. Do you anticipate? Now, this is just, I'm just speculating. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of callers. A lot of people want to get into this conversation. Do you anticipate this is a problem that we're going to have in the city of Baltimore?
Well, you know, the history has shown that, you know, kids have not stopped bringing guns to school. Adults haven't stopped. I mean, last year we caught an armed robbery ring where they were robbing our students outside of, you know, Baltimore City College, where our officers were given a very prestigious award by the school system for actually tracking this robbery ring that was catching kids between Merville and City and robbing them. And it was adults that were doing that.
Wow.
And we recovered a gun in that situation as well. So, you know, our officers are trying to be proactive, uh-huh. but they just need the support. We just need, you know, the support of the school system and also the community.
We're talking about arming Baltimore City public school officers. Jamar is calling from Woodlawn. Jamar, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, you're on the air.
Thank you. I had one question and one comment. I think I'm personally of the camp that I don't believe that guns should be brought into schools. I don't believe, and this is my personal opinion, I don't believe that the solution to guns in the schools is to bring in more guns into the schools, especially around children. It's, to me, it's just a safety thing. It's a comfort thing for me mm-hmm. in terms of, hey, so if something happens, are we going to have a trigger-happy police officer? And I think that the core of the problem with how officers are perceived is the fact that there are officers that abuse their badge, they abuse their position, and then they're not held accountable. Mm-hmm. So then that affects how everyone else is seen. But I really think that your guest said something I think is really critical, which I'd like to hear him explain further.
Okay.
He said not only has he never had to fire his weapon in 18 years, even though he's come close, but that he's actually been under fire under more than one occasion and still didn't use his weapon.
Wow.
I want to understand, to me, that if you're under fire, that seems like justification to actually use your weapon. So I'd like him to
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Would you mind sharing that experience?
So the situation, I did not have the best backdrop in one of the situations. Mm-hmm. When I say backdrop, there were other people behind the person firing the gun. And I had to find where the shots were coming from. It was a group of people. You know, one of the people that was close to me was actually struck. And I had to actually get to a safe place behind the car and find out where the shots were coming from. And when it was time to return fire, I actually chased the person who had the gun, who still had the gun in his hand, but he never turned towards me. Mm-hmm. Had he turned towards me, things would have been a little bit differently. But, you know, that was the scenario. There was no, you know, shooting in the back and all of that foolishness, because I knew that in order to be justified, I had to, justify that deadly force. So that was one of the scenarios. I think it's very important that people understand after September 11th, our officers armed themselves after September 11th and had their guns on them 15 years wow. without incident. Mm-hmm. There's never been a time where an officer was disarmed. There's never been a time where the officer used the weapon in a bad way. So I know we're going to break.
We need to go to break. This is Today with Dr. K. Sergeant Clyde Boatwright is with me. Should Baltimore City police officers in our public schools be armed? We're taking your calls. Ms. Campbell, Charles, Valerie, Robert, all of you hold on. We'll be back right after this very quick break.
And a good evening. In observance of the Columbus Day holiday on Monday, MARC will operate on an R-reduced service schedule. No MDOT-MTA commuter bus service except for commuter bus 201, which will operate on a weekend holiday schedule. An MDOT-MTA City Link and Local Link Bus, Light Rail Link, Metro Subway Link, and Mobility Link will all operate on regular schedules Monday, Columbus Day. On the Light Rail Link, we are seeing about a 15-minute delay in either direction. Local Link bus diversions because of construction include the Lime Line diverted westbound at Eastern and Eden, and the Lime Line diverted southbound at Caroline and Gulf. Also, the Brown Line diverted northbound at Broadway and Biddle. No reported problems on the MTA commuter buses. Metro Subway Link is on time. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.